Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Bonus Point Podcast. Thank you for tuning into our Major League Rugby series brought to you by OsteoStrong LA, Whale Bird Kombucha, and Macro Butter. My name is TJ Olsen, and round one of the MLR in the US is officially in the books. We had a lot of incredible matchups over the weekend. A brand new team from LA officially played their first match in the competition, and we got our first glimpse at the rugby network. So lots to talk about today. It was a great weekend of rugby with a lot of other types of rugby in there, but I'm ready to talk about it. It's been a long day for me, long stressful day. So I love talking some footy, and it's my release. So before we get into that, I got to introduce my partners in crime for this show, Cam and Walker Tice from the Rugby Index. Boys, welcome again. Great to have you here. Walker, I'll come to you first. Tell me your first thoughts about MLR footy. How was it?
I mean, it's great. It's back. That is the short and skinny of it. There's no way around it. It's back. And whatever it is, could it be better? Could it be worse? And everything in between. Yes, but it's back. And that's what's most important. No, it was great. I thought it was a super competitive weekend. No blowouts, which means that there's a lot of parity in the league this year. You know, I think that might be indicative of the very short preseason, but it was entertaining. A lot of points scored. And for that short preseason, I thought fitness was pretty good. It certainly wasn't the reason any of the teams won or lost, but no, it was a great week of rugby.
I can't disagree with you on that one. It definitely was. So Cam, I know you've been waiting for the return of the MLR as well. And what were your thoughts about the action over the weekend and the rugby network as well? What did you think about that?
Yeah, at least for the on-field play, I thought that, like Walker said, I appreciate the parity. I like that. At least looking at each team that we saw, it looks like that, you know, any day, any team could go out there and win. There's not going to be any team running away with it. There's not going to be a bottom feeder, for lack of a better term, that we've seen kind of in years past where there's one team just kind of lingering in the bottom that's kind of the lead punching bag. So I appreciate that. As far as the rugby network, almost kind of compared to the play on the field, it was, I mean, I watched all three matches that we are going to talk about today on it. And, I thought the nitpicky overall, I thought it was great, but nitpicky, I thought that the skipping around could have been a little bit easier, picking up where you left off. 'Cause you know, trying to fit in six matches all in one go is just a bit ambitious. So, you know, if you'd have a little bit better technology with skimming through or, you know, picking up where you left off in a match, much like other streaming platforms do, I thought that would be a good addition to it. But overall, I think it's fantastic. As far as I know, it's really the only platform I know of in professional sports in America that has an exclusive free, I'll say it again, free platform to, you know, increase viewership. So I think it's a huge step for the league.
Yeah, I think that's going to go a long way to increasing viewership, because we know that's one thing that one half of the sports crowd or the sports viewership, that they, as soon as they see a dollar sign next to something, they automatically go, oh, I don't want to pay for that, or I'm going to try and find something illegal. And I think you'll have a bit of a tough time trying to find something illegal for the MLR. But I think it's a good move in the way of growing the sport in the United States. But Walker, any final thoughts on what your first perception of the rugby network was? Because I was quite surprised they were going to do all the games at once. I thought they would have spaced them out or something like that. Pretty ambitious, as Cam said.
Yeah, I mean, set yourself up for success. And you know, you can even learn on the go from the previous ones. You know, I think maybe some of it is if you go all at once, fans can only watch one game at a time, so you don't accumulate the mess ups or people notice. I don't know. Maybe there is some methodology to it, but it was great. You know, the only game aesthetically that looked, I don't want to say not professional, but different was San Diego and New York, and that's just because they had, it sounds like they had a lot of limitations on a venue that they wanted to use initially in Las Vegas and then had to pivot last minute. So all things considered, I think they pulled off a great program, but no, I thought the broadcast was great. the halftime break was a little bit clunky, and again, mm-hmm. we're being nitpicky here. But as far as providing free rugby to viewers and you know, fans, no complaints. Let's have it. Let's keep it. It's free until it's not. So until they can sell it, and that's part of the commercialization of the league. But while it is free, I'm gonna abuse it.
Yeah, one of my favorite documentaries, Winning Time. I think we're definitely in winning time right now. So I think when it comes to it, we're going to be nitpicky, but overall, we've got rugby back. It's on a free network. There's a lot of wins there. And I think when it comes to the San Diego, New York broadcast, I had the same reaction to you, but there's some points that I'll share when we talk about that game later. But before we chat about the players, the teams, and who we liked, disliked, we've got some new trial laws that we introduced this season. I want to quickly run through them and get your opinions on them one by one. So, because I know there's a couple of laws that you guys aren't really feeling, and I know there's one or two that you guys are feeling. So let's go to the five new laws total. The kick clock is the first one for conversions and penalties. It's now 60 seconds instead of 90 seconds. Cam, I'll come to you first. Like or dislike?
Like it. I mean, we all seen a fly half or a fullback take, you know, probably more than 90 seconds, especially in, you know, some social matches or some club level matches where it feels like they're lining up a kick, you know, pick up the blades of grass, make sure the wind's right. And it feels like it's going on 4 or 5 minutes before, you know, they're actually taking their approach. So, I mean, it's all about keeping the pace of play, you know, moving. The more stagnant the matches, the more it feels like people are watching, you know, their Sunday golf or their you know, first, honestly, the first 60 games of baseball, they just don't matter. And the more you can cut out time and space that doesn't matter, the more engaging the product's going to be. So I think it's overall, at least that rule is for a better product.
Yeah. Walker, agree, disagree?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm beside myself that Cam just compared rugby to golf, but you pivot and you move on. But I agree for all the same reasons. I keep it going. The less spotlight that's on the backs, the better. You know, get them off the screen, let the forward shine.
I knew something like that was coming.
but for all the same reasons Cam pointed out, I like that it speeds up the game. A minute is totally sufficient time to line yourself up, you know, send yourself, do what you need to do and fire off a kick. And it's good. And especially I think it's going to I guarantee there's going to be a time at the end of a game where it's going to come into play, and, you know, a time where a team could run out the clock at the end of a game. Somebody's going to get a turnover last minute and kick a penalty kick to win the game. And it's going to be because that speeds it up. So I'm for it.
I personally like this one as well, because I can obviously see what they're trying to do. They're trying to get as much action in as 80 minutes possible, engage the fans more. I never thought they needed 90 seconds, to be honest, but hey, I was never kicking for points when I was playing rugby, so I wouldn't have any expertise. And I know you get any chance, you're going to plug the forwards in, so good job on that, Walker. Awesome. So the second one is the off. Yeah, seriously. But the second one is the offside line. It will be fed line and channel where that ball is being fed to the scrum. So no one is allowed to go past that. So it's for unimpeded access to the ball at the back of the scrum for the attacking team. This one I'm kind of meh about, like, because I feel that halfbacks don't need that much space. I thought that the line of the flanker was enough. But at the same time, it's the same thing. It promotes clean ball. It's better for the viewer. What do you guys think? I'll go to you, Walker, first.
I'm a little bit of the same boat. Like I appreciate what they're trying to do, but I don't know that it monumentally or in a significant way changes the game, positive or negatively. I can't say that the scrum halves were causing that much trouble at the back of scrums that it needed a change. I'm kind of indifferent. It's fine. I don't have much of an opinion on it, to be honest with you. It's something interesting to try out. If it's fruitful, great. It's good for the game. If not, you know, no big deal.
Yeah. And Cam, do you agree with that one?
I mean, being a nine myself, I think I honestly don't think that I think more of this, you know, breakdown in the scrum causes more and ball impediment than scrum has, you know, coming back there. So I don't particularly like the rule. To me, you know, scrum half, if we're down late in a match and, you know, I'm trying to create a contested ball, being able to, you know, maybe cheat the line a little bit and shoot up right as I see that scrum half kind of reaching, the opposing scrum half reaching in there, I can go up there, try and strip them, try and, you know, get them to fumble and knock forward something just to try and create, you know, something late. So obviously you can't really put a time frame on it when you're allowed to, when you're not.
But see, I'm the same. Like it's not sevens. Like I don't think that like the rule needs to be changed. If you want more space as a nine, you can have your flanker stick out his leg or do something like that and create more space. But with this one here, it's neither here nor there. Like if you want to get more space, then focus on better form in your scrums and then get better delivery and quicker ball. So I don't know. I mean, anybody can make an argument this way or that way, but I think this leads us to the next one, is that referees will work with stricter protocols that will limit the number of scrums to two per incident. So the original plus one reset for a collapse, penalty or free kick. So I want to hear from the forward again. So let's talk about this, Walker. Is with this one, what do you feel about this one? Do you feel that they should just play it out, or do you reckon that this rule is good?
It's good. You know, the less volume forwards have for error, the better. So if we only get two chances to screw up, that's a good thing. Cause it's never our fault. So, you know, it's always the other guy. No, I think it's a good thing. Again, it speeds up the game. I think it, because it does put a limit to it, it forces both teams to be better. You can't consistently reset. Otherwise you're going to get penalized, and it's not, it might be your fault, it might not be your fault, but because, you know, the referee has to make a decision, especially if you're the defending team, you want good clean ball. You want to set a good base. Like you don't want to get penalized. You would rather them take a ball out the back of a scrum and then, you know, have a free kick. So, I'm for it. I love scrumming. I love, playing in the front row, but in this case, I gotta err on the side of pace of play, and I think ultimately it's a very good thing for Major League Rugby.
And Cam, I know that this is usually your rest time. You just get to watch all the forwards do all the hard work, and then you go, oh sweet, another reset. Then we can take some more rest. Are you for or against this one?
Yeah, there's I don't know. There's a lot of miles that us nines have to put on our legs, so we kind of need that rest. But no, I'm with Walker on this. They're, especially as a fan, removing myself from, you know, the nine world, as a fan, it makes a lot of sense. There's nothing worse than just seeing a scrum that keeps collapsing, that can't at least, you know, get the ball out, and the ref will say, at least just play it through, and, you know, we'll go from there. But there's nothing worse than a continuously collapsing scrum. So to all the points that Walker made, I'm all for it.
Okay, so we got two more to go, and this one has been a bit of an interesting one. So 7 points will automatically be given if a try is scored under the post. No conversion necessary. So for me, I kind of like this one, not because of the viewer aspect or saving the kicker to kick a goal that goes over 95% of the time, but I'm more interested to see how a player can manipulate this and use this to their advantage. So for example, whether they play mind games with their opposition or to whether to design a set piece to stretch out the attack more as much as possible, because they have to defend the under the post more often, because obviously it'll get more points. So I need to watch this more to see what happens and see if people will actually do that. But I'm actually really for this one. So Cam, what do you like? Do you like this one, or do you not like this one?
You know, I don't particularly care for it, because the point of the kick is that it's an added challenge. And, you know, just because that was, to me, the reward for centering the ball was that you got an easy kick, not that you got an automatic point. And I think you make a great point. I don't really think we saw it at all in the first round of matches. It'll be very interesting to see how the set pieces and even the open play begins to change around, you know, within the 5 meters of how teams want to attack, focusing, you know, knowing that, you know, if they can center that ball or at least get into a position where they can, you know, break that line and then have a chance to center once they're in the try zone, mm-hmm. will they make a more conscious effort to keep the ball towards the middle of the field?
Walker, like it, dislike it?
It reiterates what they're trying to accomplish in speeding up the game. You know, you eliminate that extra minute that the kicker has before play starts again. So in that light, I appreciate the consistency. I appreciate holistically what they're trying to accomplish with all the law changes. It's pace of play. It's speeding up the game. It's creating, I think Cam made the point, more meaningful minutes throughout the game. You're cutting out the downtime and all that. You know, as a lumbering forward, I didn't mind the minutes, you know, catching your breath, water underneath the post, scoring or not. I just kind of like the break, you know, but no, I think for what they're trying to accomplish with speeding up the game, creating as much meaningful time throughout the 80 minutes, I think it's on par. I think it is going to come back to bite somebody's ass at the end of a game. You know, to Cam's point again, the point of scoring is that you also get the opportunity to earn more points. Yeah. And that's part of the challenge. So I appreciate that there's consistency and there's a linear direction in what they're trying to accomplish. But I think this one just might be a half overstep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is the final one. And this is one that obviously we've been talking a little bit about in our group chat. And I know, Walker, you don't really like this one. So a red card will no longer mean a team is down to 14 players for the rest of the match. The new law will see the red carded player reduce a team to 14 men for 20 minutes. And after that time has passed, the team will be able to replace the player with someone from their bench. The red carded player cannot return to the field still, but he will still face disciplinary action, but we can still have 15 on 15 if 20 minutes gone by. So, like I said, we spoke about it in our group chat. I was a fan of this originally because I was like, okay, then some games won't get lopsided, but it took me one game to immediately reverse my thought process after seeing the amount of dangerous penalties that New England had during the LA game. And I see this as once people know how to use this to their advantage, or this is just my opinion, this could open up a very bad door for the players in the league. Their thought process could be, it doesn't matter if we get red carded and face disciplinary action. Their thought process will go, we'll be back to 15 men in 20 minutes. So, Walker, I'll come to you first. What are your thoughts on it?
I don't like it. I think I sort of played out the scenario of, okay, how do I get a red card? Well, one, I do something pretty egregious and something that it's not even in the run of play. It's not, you know, I lunge and I tackled high. It's I'm throwing a right hook and I have malice in my heart. You know, it's something that's trying to injure the other player, whatever that accumulates to. If it's a straight red, I think you're done and you're consciously compromising your team in the safety of another player to traditionally get a straight red. Yeah. So, you know, and I think you're down a man and that's that. You know, I played through my head the scenario of a double yellow and, you know, a player, okay, you know, a reckless tackle, I get a yellow card. And then, you know, because I've had multiple infringements and I got my yellow card, now I get caught and I stick my arm out and it's a high tackle. I never had that issue, but you know, I was usually getting high tackled because I'm so short, but I didn't mind it in the scenario of a double yellow team gets a red card. And then, you know, say there's 30 minutes left in a game for the last 10 to be, you know, in theory, even numbers. I don't mind that off of a double yellow because it's not the severity of infringements. While it's multiple, it's not the same level of malice or just maliciousness that might be done in a red card. You know, I thought about, Can you make it almost like a technical or a double technical where it's a red card? If it's a red one, you get the opportunity to come back. If it's a red two, you're just down a man. But keep the laws as they are. This doesn't follow the path of their other law changes of speeding up the game in any way or making it a cleaner game. So I'm really not a fan of it at all. I tried to rationalize it in my head. But I don't see what it does. I'm not a huge fan of it at all.
Scotty Ferreira from the Rugby Rant podcast is throwing in an orange card. So we could have a middle ground and we could have a card that doesn't necessarily mean red or yellow. It's I like that idea, Scotty.
We'll just get a stoplight up there.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so we can just turn to it and then we'll just go, show us the light. That's awesome.
There we go.
Yeah. All right, Cam, round us off. What do you think about this one?
I actually appreciate it. I think pretty early. Do you see guys sent off for a malicious red card? And to me, when there's that red card dealt, it's just a poor excuse for a team to say, well, you know, we played the last 40 minutes or the last 30 minutes down a man and was close before that. It takes out, you know, it kind of creates more accountability in it and more parity within the game. And especially we've seen plenty of games once the red card is dealt, teams just are pushing it wide. They, you know, get much easier overloads and it typically tends to get out of hand, especially if it comes late. Early where they can, you know, really use that to advantage to wear out the other team, having to cover just a little bit of extra ground. Mm-hmm. And so I think it ultimately creates that parity that maybe not the pace of play they're looking for, but it certainly creates the parity that they're looking for where, you know,
the entertainment factor or something like
that. It's not compelling television. The nail biters and the competitive action is what's going to keep people engaged.
Okay. All right. Well, we're not usually a debate show, but I do like a good debate on my hands. So it's good stuff. But I'm excited to see these trial laws be played out. I think once we start to get down to the nitty gritty about what the viewer wants to see, especially in America, because rugby is such a new sport to a lot of people. I'm thinking these types of laws will try and push the narrative about rugby and try and spread it across the country. So any way to spread it, that's why I'm liking it. But let's get into our rapid recap of the game so that way we can actually talk about the gameplay. So Rooney ended up beating the Legion 36-29. I really did like that game. It was a very tight one. It was good to see my boy Andy Ellis back. Can't wait to talk about him. The Free Jacks lost to the Giltinis 27-42. So good to see rugby back in the Coliseum. It was amazing. The Toronto Arrows lost to Rugby ATL in a very close battle, 14-21. The Sabercats, we were talking about the Sabercats being a dark horse, and they ended up beating the defending champions, the Seawolves, 30-24. So who knows if that's just week one luck or whether they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. So I'm very excited to see that one. The Warriors beat the AGs in a very, very tight match, 30-28. And Old Glory and Nola, first draw we've seen, both ending with 26 points. So really liking a lot of those matchups. But let's get stuck into talking about the matches. And our first matchup involves the new kids on the block. That's the LA Giltinis versus the Free Jacks. And I want to talk about LA first. So personally, I liked a lot from what I saw from LA. I feel like they're definitely going to be a problem in the Western Conference in this league. I personally feel that New England showcased the Giltinis' weak point, and that was definitely their scrums. My boy Sefasi was a monster for the Free Jacks. He definitely earned his paycheck for that game and showed the league why the Free Jacks brought him over from Australia, just because he's such a gun scrummager. He's a killer when it comes to it. I was pretty surprised the Giltinis struggled so much in that area because they have some very experienced scrum talent, especially in the starting props, two guys that have been in Super Rugby and have scrummaged very well in Super Rugby. So I don't know if it's their hooker, what's his name? Viola Nunu.
The hooker's fault.
Yeah, so it's you always got to blame it on the hooker. So he's a guy who's spot on for his lineouts and is very deadly on the edge. But I need to see him play more to see if it's his scrum form that really let us down or whether he's the weak link. But all in all, I think it was a very successful hit out for the Giltinis. Walker, I'll come to you first on the first game. How did you like seeing it in the Coliseum? I loved it, mate. It was amazing.
It was impressive. I thought it was going to be cavernous, and it wasn't at all. It looked, I mean, for no fans in an empty stadium, it looked pretty slick. I gotta be honest. When they first announced it, I was dubious and I'll say it. I was a naysayer of playing there. But seeing it in person, it changed my opinion and it was a lot of fun. I just hope they can put fans in the stands and pack that place out. Because if they do, it's going to be awesome and it's going to be great for the game.
Yeah. Anything particularly you liked about the gameplay?
I mean, LA has a really impressive rolling mall, that I thought was a little bit surprising. I thought they were going to have, I anticipated the ability and the open play and the individual skill sets that they have. They've got a really talented roster. There's no doubt about that. I think in LA, they just displayed all of that. New England's a pretty gritty team. They went down twice, with yellow cards and they're a gritty team. You know, I think they're going to be a tough out. In the East, I don't see them being a leader of the pack, but I could see them being a mid-table team that's pretty gritty, makes it to the playoffs and maybe doesn't make a whole lot of funk in the playoffs. But DTH Vandermeer is everything as advertised. Oh. The dude just flies up the wing. Ryberg was a little bit quiet, which for a guy that's such a rumbler – and it's probably just because they have so much talent in their back line. Meeks was awesome. Gitao was pretty spot on. Offensively, I don't have any critiques for LA. I think New England was a little bit undynamic in their attack, but I thought it was a really good game and New England showed a lot of grit, but LA's going to be a really tough out every single game and they can put up points quick.
Yeah. Cam.
Yeah. A lot of the similar points that Walker made, I think in short, LA is going to be that team that just has too much firepower for teams to handle. And I think that's where their identity is going to end up being, is just being that they'll give up a little bit on defense to really just set the precedent on offense. And I think they'll probably, this is obviously an early go at it, but I wouldn't be surprised if they led the league in points this year. I was very disappointed with New England's attack, mostly because Ryan Martin coming in was supposed to be bringing in this type of offense that was essentially positionless, with the exception of maybe like you obviously have to have your 9-10 combination. With the exception of that, he was, they're talking about loose forwards playing where centers are. And, there's all these interchangeable positions, and it was really, really not what I had expected. It was a lot of very Northern Hemisphere type rugby, where it's catch the ball, take it in contact. Mm-hmm. And, next phase, catch the ball, take it in contact. It just was very undynamic, which I was disappointed to see. I thought it would be and that's sort of the players they're bringing in, is these guys that are – they brought in a number of 7-stars that, Dougie Fife, I know, and Tembu isn't able to make it over yet because of visa issues. But, these are the guys they're bringing in, and the style of play just didn't reflect it.
Mm. And I think when we're talking about that theme with the 7-stars, the free jack standout for me was Bodine Walker. I think, especially from the New Zealand 7s, like I said, that kid played so well. And I think the free jacks are going to lean on him really heavily this year. Personally, I was shocked, like I said in the beginning, by the terrible discipline the free jacks showcased. It was just penalty after penalty, and guys like DTH were getting wrecked in a few nasty situations. So I hope they get better in that area. I don't want to see that again. Great to see rugby in the Coliseum. Great to see rugby in LA in general. And I'm looking forward to watching that team rip up. But you were talking about the point leaders, and wouldn't be surprised if LA. Currently, Matt Giddo has the highest conversions. He's got 5. You've got penalty goals are pretty low, but total points, we're, 6th with DTH. He's got 10 points. And then he's 2nd in the tries. Leaderboard, and then we've got try assists were second in that as well. So I think that that trend is going to continue with all that firepower. But we'll see. So next we'll move on and talk about Nola and Old Glory DC. And this match was a very interesting one to watch because it was our first draw of the season. And I just want to go straight to you guys with this one. Cam, what did you think about this game?
Well, this one was really, really hard to kind of pick apart. Nola, honestly, in a lot of ways, they should have lost the game. In a lot of ways, they should have ran away with it. and that sounds really kind of ass backwards, but
no, it makes total sense. Through the game I watched too, I agree with that.
They missed so many opportunities that I thought that DC should have won. You know, part of my belief is that if you lose the opportunity, or if you give up the opportunities that you're given, you don't deserve to win. But at the same time, you know, they dominated possession, they dominated play, and in that regard, they absolutely deserve it. You know, I think if they played as well as they did from, I think it was probably right on the 45th minute through the 70th minute, 75th minute, that 20-minute span, if they played like that the entire game, I think we're talking about the only blowout of this weekend. DC played well in certain areas, but I think if Nola can clean up what they're doing and the handling errors, and just the our coach in Cincinnati here has a favorite phrase of just figure it out, which I think is fair in rugby.
So simple but so effective. It's like when you're screaming on there, just figure it out, your brain just goes, okay, yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, it's rugby can be very simplistic if you let it be, and it's, you know, catch the ball, run forward, try and beat somebody. And I just think Nola was somehow getting ahead of themselves and just had way too many drops and way too many mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Walker, agree, disagree?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at both teams on paper, the packs, the 1 through 8, I think they're pretty even. Both have a great set of loose forwards. Both are pretty young. Jameson Fontanana Schultz. You've got Mungo Mason, and on DC side, you've got Cam Dolan, not quite young, but you've got Devin Short and really good loose forward play. Really, for me, I was surprised that Nola's back line didn't just take advantage of DC. I thought at every position they were the superior team. And I think with Cam's point, there were just a lot of handling errors. Obviously, there's a new center combination there, so that's going to make a massive impact just throughout the continuity of your back line. I feel like Nola has been training quite a bit together. It's certainly comparatively longer than the other teams, so I'm a little bit surprised by that. You know, hats off to DC. Yeah, you don't have to dominate possession sometimes to win gritty games. And I think there's going to be a lot of that in the East. I think in the West, you're going to see a couple of blowouts, maybe once every weekend. I think the East is just going to be a dogfight, and every game is just going to be an absolute slugfest. And so you don't have to dominate possession, but you have to be efficient, and that's exactly what they were. They just happened to come out at an even point. To the flip side of that, and Cam highlighted it, Nola, just take advantage of your opportunities and you're golden and you're done. The game is over 60 minutes in, and you can, I don't want to say coast because you don't want to coast, but you can be very concise in how you play the last 20 minutes. Be patient. You don't have to just, you know, try to make something happen. And I think that compounded their errors. They were, again, you start with a couple of handling errors. You try to do something again or do something more. And it just wasn't working. It wasn't clicking for Nola. And I'm a little bit surprised by that because they seem to have a really good group of leadership there. Scott Lawrence, I have nothing but good things to say about him. And I'm a little bit surprised by that. I do know that they've got a really small staff coaching wise. And so I wonder with some new pieces, if that has anything to do with that, but shout out to Matt Harbin getting team of the week. So always great to see a front rower in there.
I would like
any chance you can get, right?
I sure love, man. I'm a lover.
Danny Tusitala for DC. I mentioned in our preview, I think the guy solidified a very, very close place in my heart. He's definitely going to be one of my favorites this year.
So let's talk about that really quick, because I also believe he's going to be a pivotal part in their success. Obviously, I know him pretty well from living in Auckland for the year and coaching at his club Ponsonby and knowing a few of the players that he played with. And they were the second fastest team in ruck speed last season. So I think if he can stay on top of it, and he can get that ball out quick, which I know he can do, obviously coming from sevens and in the Auckland Mitre 10 Cup that he was doing, I definitely believe that he can be a very pivotal piece for them to get over the hump. It's just all dependent on how they can work on their ruck speed. So, yeah, Danny, I think he's going to be a really, really important part. But I also liked what you spoke about, Walker, is the center combo. So you got JP Duplessis and you got the Argentinian Capello for NOLA. I want to see more of them this season to see how that pairing is going to go, because obviously different playing styles. We don't know if they're going to merge very well together. I think they did pretty well on the weekend. But yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting, because quick ball with that aspect, if you can play the distributor or you can manipulate those inside seams, I think they've experienced enough that they can do it. But before we move on to talk about our last game, San Diego and Rooney, I want to give a shout out to the San Jose State men's and women's rugby clubs and the Lynn Benton Youth Rugby Lions, who are starting practice soon, asked me to give them a shout out. So good luck, guys. It's always good to see grassroots rugby back in the mix. But let's talk about it. San Diego and Rooney, this matchup was getting a lot of grief for how terrible the coverage was in the game, comparing the feeds to like the LA game. But I think a lot of people have to realize that places like the Coliseum, they're built for filming professional sporting games. So whereas the field the Legion are playing out of have a lot less filming opportunities. And like you said, Walker, they've had to scramble last minute. It's not like they've been planning this for months and they go, let's film out of this location. They've literally had to scramble. So I think a lot of people have to take that into consideration. I'm not saying they need an excuse and they should just have crappy feeds for the rest of their games, but people need to understand those variables. So when it comes down to that, do you guys agree with me or disagree when it comes to that? I'll come to you first, Walker.
What, that it needs to improve or
I think we all understand that it does need to improve, but I think the fans just cutting a little bit of slack when it comes to that. We're not expecting like the most high quality feeds.
Yeah, well, and to your point, they're transitioning on short notice. My understanding is that they had a different, maybe more traditional professional venue in Las Vegas that's used by other professional teams in market. That was their anticipation to use that venue, and in the last week or so, 2 weeks, had to pivot from that. I don't know the context of to why, but they had to pivot to the venue that they used, and so. To your point, the Coliseum is designed and the broadcast presentation is going to be so different. It's just a different level. And I think it's even goes beyond that, but the specificness of sport does make a difference. I don't know the venue that San Diego is using, but it's certainly not, a traditional rugby field. And that's obvious. I cut them some slack. That's not my gripe. That's not my hill to stand on right now. I honestly, I thought it was a pretty good game. It was a great game. I'll give it that. But knowing what I know about the challenges, I appreciate being a tenant in a venue, having done it, you know, myself in professional sports. And we had the luxury of having a great facility. So I can only imagine the challenges in a not great facility. So, you know, hats off to them for getting the job done, making no excuses, and you're dealt the cards that you're dealt, and you made it work for, you know, it's rough, but so is 2020 and rugby's bad. So I don't hang it against them. Can it be better? Will it be better? I have total confidence that it will. I will. And especially their venue in San Diego, it's beautiful, you know. Yep. I will make my judgment when they play at their home field, and that'll be my hill to stand on.
Mm-hmm. And just before we get to the gameplay, Cam, do you disagree with that one, or do you agree?
I mean, it's a little disappointing. It kind of took just in a little bit, sort of the production of that one. And I even thought of the one of Austin and Utah. I didn't think it was spectacular. I kind of set myself for failure because the first game I watched was New England versus LA. So, you know, kind of set my bar a little too high, possibly, but
it's like starting off with like a nice grass fed steak. And then you have to go to like some like chuck meat that you get in like some like low rate grocery store or something like that. I understand that. I really
set myself up well there, but I think with the excitement of the rugby network and all that, and kind of this higher level professionalism that they were presenting, it kind of took some of the wind out of my sail. Seeing, and I totally agree with Walker and understand what he's saying, and I think it's very on point that they had a pivot and they made the best of a situation trying to kind of just bring it all together last minute. But you know, to put yourself in that echelon of not just semi-professional, but you know, completely professional, perception is reality. And to new fans that are watching the sport or this competition, they see that it's going to be, and they don't understand the context of why it's like that. It's going to digest pretty poorly.
Yeah, I agree with that, especially with some sports like how well the NFL is doing. Or even if you're a rugby fan from Australasia and you've been watching Stan Sport, how they've been doing their broadcasting of the Super Rugby right now, I can't hear enough about it. It's just the game scenarios and just the game coverage, how they get so close to the action on the field, and the coverage and the commentary is so in depth and so interesting. So if someone's coming over and then watching that as an MLR fan, brand new to the game, I do agree with you. It can be a little bit of a hard hit because people will see there and go, I don't want to sit here and watch that another week because of how terrible the coverage is. But I agree with Walker in a sense. I think we just got to let it unfold and give them a little bit of time and then just go from there. But let's talk about this last game. So for the game itself, I really enjoyed watching Andy Ellis play again. Like I said, I'm obviously biased with this one because I've loved this guy so much when he played for the All Blacks, and obviously didn't like him when he played for the Crusaders because I'm a Chiefs fan. But I think he controlled the tempo really well. And honestly, I thought they should have won by more against San Diego. I know that's obviously something that San Diego fans don't like to hear, but I definitely believe they should have won by more. So, Cam, I'll come back to you first. What were your thoughts on this match?
The elements played a pretty big factor in it. You could see it on the touch flags and, you know, even the goal posts, you could see them rattling in the wind. So it really, you know, it's almost worse than heavy rain. They really had to shorten their, you know, spacing of play. You just saw any sort of pass that was tried to, you know, try and gain some quick width would just either sail on them or just die out halfway. Mm-hmm. And I know it's not because Andy Ellis can't whip one out, you know, 20 meters to the sideline. Mm-hmm. We all know he can whip one out there when the elements are ideal, but yeah, it looked like a small windstorm through there. But I'd have to applaud Rooney. They did a much better job than San Diego creating space with short passes, in particular with their offloads. I thought they did a very good job putting their, you know, teammates through gaps and sort of manufacturing that space when it might not necessarily be there because of the wind.
No, I agree with that. It's when I went to the Las Vegas Sevens tournament, I went there and there was on the field, I think it's Sam Boyd Stadium, on the fields that are just right next to it, they were having all the the club games and like the Sevens tournaments and things like that. And I went to go watch those games because I had a few friends playing in there, and you see all the goalposts, they're either inverted or they're blown over like crazy amounts. I hate to be the kicker for those types of goalposts because they just be moving all over the place. But definitely does get windy out in the desert. But Walker, finish us off. What did you think about this game? You're obviously wearing a San Diego top. So what do you think?
Well, I mean, I like the top. San Diego played well. They had a good first half. I think they came out with a lot of wind in their sails. They had some really hard charging runs. Shout out to Sam Uching. Great first half. They subbed pretty early and often. I was surprised by that because they did have such a strong first half. I felt like they lost a lot of continuity in the second half. And the subs, obviously they brought in a lot of talent off the bench. Santiago Iglesias, Bourne Basson in the back line, Travis Larson, Chris Bauman, your guy, Nate Sylvia. You brought in a lot of talent off the bench, but it just, the continuity was off. It was different than the first half. I was surprised at how well they played the first half and how quickly they subbed. And on the flip side of that, Rooney, they didn't use, I think they used four of their eight subs. They came out, I don't want to say flat, but really weren't all that dynamic. And then second half had a great half, super efficient in their ball retention and in control of the game. And I think you pointed out early, I was surprised that the margin of victory wasn't higher. Hollinshead was 3 of 6 on kicking, and I think wind had majority of the factor to do with that. I think if he makes 2, maybe 3 of those missed kicks, you're talking about 4 to 6 more points, and it's a 12-14 win as opposed to just a single try. So, I think Rooney really did well in the second half. Gimrescheis moving to 8-man, they brought in who was it for Charlie Hewitt? Charlie Hewitt, big lineout presence, but I think he got kind of lost in the play, and then a little bit of it they were able to open up with Ben Bassano or Bonasso.
He kind of reminds me of like the Rob Sibbins of the Wallabies and the Waratahs. Like he can execute a line out like no one's business, but when you need him to do something on the field or really make a dent in someone, he's not that kind of guy. It's unfortunate, but that's what you need in your balance and your locks. You really need someone who can really be effective in those lineouts, whether you have to sacrifice that or not, it goes like that. But yeah, I agree with you in that one.
Well, and especially against the big hitters of San Diego, they pack some punch. And yes, San Diego was without Rob Shaw. Rooney was without Civetta. I think if you bring in Civetta and you leave the loose forwards where they are with Minturn at 8, Cara Pryor at 7, Pryor's a monster, dude. He gets around the field. He might be one of my favorite players in the league right now, just from a pace standpoint. Gimrescheis is a brick wall. He's got the stopping power of the 6 that you want. They've got a great back line. I'm a big fan of they've got a good back line. They've got a great back row. I'm a big fan of a back row. Front row, Rockford, don't go get a yellow card over something stupid. Fawcett, the dude's a monster. The Butcher, he just cuts him up every single day. And I think Rooney is going to be the team in the East to be the top dog. I just based off of what I saw this week, they get Civetta hopefully soon. I don't know when he's doing to be into town, but when they get him, they've got a pretty complete roster.
I'm definitely excited to see not them face off again, but obviously just see them play against other teams this season, because San Diego and Rooney, they've always been strong. They're always been a great presence. And I think adding to that roster, it's just made them a lot better. So I think San Diego will really rally from this, as opposed to other teams who would take a loss in week one and they kind of would get down in the dumps and they would just keep going through that trend. I think they'll rally in this next game. But before we move on, I'm just going to come back to you, Walker, and then finish off with you, Cam. Honorable mentions. Any other games or any other players you guys like seeing over the weekend?
Well, I already gave my one to Matt Harmon. Shout out to the front rowers. No, Fawcett was the other. Where was the hooker? And then who was the tight head prop? Was it who was tight head prop of the week? I forget.
I can't remember.
But shout out to my front rowers. That's all I got for you.
One of the LA guys.
Was it Charlie? Was it Charlie Abel?
No, shout out to the forward, shout out to the front row. You guys crush it. You're all dashingly good looking, and exactly. Keep that chin high.
Yeah, that's what I like. A good set of cauliflower ears. Oh man, yeah. makes me froth. There you go. Well, Cam, finish this off. Let's go. Nose. Oh no, man! Like seriously, one of my best mates who plays over in France, in high school, he was supposed to get his cauliflower ear drained. He never did. It's grown into what looks like a salt cube. It just is sitting in his ear. And every time I see it, I feel like it's growing. And he goes, nope, same size. It's just, I think I'm just eating the right foods and getting it nutrients. And I was like, getting it nutrients? That's not what you want. Come on. All right, Cam, what do you got? Honorable mentions.
Any game? Tusi Tala just blew me away. And I didn't get a chance to mention it, but he really impressed me was obviously his pace of play, how quickly he gets the ball out and out to Robertson, who also, you know, both of them made the team of the week for a very clear reason. But I think one of the lost art forms of a nine is their support lines and not just, you know, getting ball out, but when there's a line break, making sure they're an option to offload to. And I mean, that's how both of his tries were scored, were being an added support line. And I think just about every scrum half in the league could take a page out of that and add it to their arsenal. Cause it's, you know, especially getting the open, it's an added dynamic.
Yeah, no, I'll echo that because you see all the best halfbacks you'll see in New Zealand, Aaron Smith and Brad Weber, they're always there for running that support line, and that's why they end up scoring tries on the highlight reel. So, yeah, definitely 100% agree with that. But excited to see more games. The Rugby Network is proving to be an awesome little app, especially in week one. I was very surprised by that. I thought there was going to be a lot of glitches as opposed to a lot of other first-time apps. So shout out to them. If nobody has heard so far, go ahead and download the Rugby Network app. Definitely get all the highlights and everything there to watch all the games. But it's called the Bonus Point for a reason. And today we're going to stick with the American theme. I've got my USA Rugby shirt on, but today we're going to talk about the USA Sevens program as opposed to the 15s. So specifically an announcement regarding a former Sevens player, Nate Ebner. So those for you who don't know, Nate was a part of the US Sevens team in 2016 and when he went to the Olympics. He also was a part of his in the USA program for the under-20s and the under-19s. But in between rugby, he was playing professional football. So he won 3 Super Bowls for the Patriots and also played recently for my New York Giants, who are in the crappiest division in the East. I hate it. But his teammate from the Patriots, Patrick Chung, him and his teammate there, they're also the owners of the New England Free Jacks. So he still has very strong rugby ties to the community, even though he's in professional football. But this is where it gets interesting. So I've been talking to a lot of people about this, and it's stirring a lot of debate on social media. Ebner just announced that he will join the 30-man squad to compete for one of 12 jerseys to represent the USA at the Olympics this year. So a lot of people have seen me on social media specifically and a lot of other people going to bat to talk about this. And I personally think he's a great advocate for the rugby community here in the US. And being an owner of an MLR team, I know that he isn't the most talented or gifted rugby player in the US, but he was a great rugby player when he played, when he was a part of the squad. And he's also an incredible athlete. I mean, you kind of have to be to win 3 Super Bowls. So this has been all over social media. And like I said, I've gone to bat for Nate, and I could say it's only good for their chances. Mike Friday, he's a very knowledgeable and experienced coach for the USA Sevens program. There's a reason the USA program has grown so far under his leadership. And I honestly believe he wouldn't select someone on this team for a publicity stunt. If you get picked for this team, you can play. So I've said on multiple occasions that if Nate goes to camp and he can't play anymore or there's a player that's better than him, cut him. Like, just get rid of him, because there's no reason he should be kept on if he can't play anymore. I'm in no way advocating for him and saying that he was as good as he was 5 years ago. He should be there because he was there 5 years ago. But at the very least, I personally believe he should be given an opportunity to go into that camp and fight for a spot. He will bring his rugby expertise into the camp environment. His presence and his competitive spirit will put others on notice, making them compete for that jersey. And I think when you look at the worst case and the best case scenario, the worst is he comes in, he helps the team, or he maybe disrupts it and gets cut. The best case scenario is he will be selected in the team. He goes on to play for the US in the Olympics and he wins a silver medal after losing to New Zealand. So that's basically my thought process around it. So I think when everybody needs to look at, this is my personal opinion, they need to understand the US needs more rugby players and to create a rugby environment in that camp. He knows what it takes and he will be in that camp. So some people may call me a fanboy or disagree with me, but I think he deserves a spot in that squad. So if you disagree with me, fine. That's totally your opinion. I respect it. It's what makes America great. You get your freedom of speech. But a lot of rugby coaches and players I've spoken to have said the exact same thing. So give him a shot. If he isn't up to snub, cut him. So Cam, I'm going to come to you first. What are your thoughts?
This one's actually a bit of a tough one. Walker and I actually went to the same high school as Nate. We're 3 years younger than
him. Really?
So we have some familiarity there. He probably wouldn't know who we are for obvious reasons. But, yeah, I mean, one, same hometown. Everybody that I know that knows him, just a genuine good dude. The limelight of the NFL, nothing like that's ever gotten to him. Just the same guy that comes from, you know, suburban Ohio. With that being said, I just don't see him making this team. I think from a, you know, and I don't want to say publicity, but from a drawing attention to the sport and trying to grow the game, I think bringing him in makes a lot of sense. There have been a couple key injuries to the squad, so they do need to find different avenues to find talent leading up to the Olympics. I would be surprised if he makes it, mostly because I was pretty disappointed with his level of play the last time when he did make the squad in the Olympics. It's not a knock on him. You can't go from playing football or any other sport for the last 3.5 years, come in for 2, 3, 4 months, pick up rugby and just be the same player. I think mm-hmm. if he came in and had maybe 12 to 18 months to focus exclusively on rugby, we would see a top performer on the U.S. team. But it's just, you can't transition and play at an Olympic level in such a short time frame.
I definitely agree with that. It's not going to be an easy transition because, like you said, no one can really do that. I think you have to have a really special mindset. Even a lot of people have said crossover athletes that have played for countries like England or France or other places like that, who obviously grew up playing rugby, it's still an issue for them. I'm by no way saying that he's going to do that. That's why I said go ahead and cut him if he sucks, because right. that's how it goes. I think getting into the squad, 100%. But yeah, the team, I'm definitely in agreement with you. If he isn't up to snub, get rid of him. But Walker, agree, disagree. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have a difficult time saying anything bad about the guy. He didn't play great or really well at the Olympics, but the team as a whole was seemed disjointed. And maybe that is because they brought in new faces. So did he play well at the Olympics? No, but the whole team was kind of a little, I wasn't overwhelmed considering how well they had been playing on the circuit. Just what was maybe how many months prior. You know, they have a really talented team. To your point, they do have some injuries right now. So bringing him in, I'm not too mad about it. If it is a publicity stunt, I hope it works.
Yeah,
I hope it grows the game. I don't think Mike Friday's in the business of publicity stunts. He seems like a pretty no nonsense kind of guy, and let the play on the field kind of do your advertising type of guy. So I don't think that's his angle. I think he sees a guy that's extremely talented, extremely athletic. To Cam's point, can be refined to be an Olympic athlete on the sevens circuit or sevens field, but is he going to do it in 2 to 3 months? I just don't think you can go from playing one professional sport for a decade, flip the switch to another one and pick up every little nuance that you need. And you've seen it in the inverse. You've seen high level rugby players go to try play American football. Athletically, you know, straight line sprint, are they good enough? Yes. You know, vice versa both ways, but it's the nuances of either sport that are just so, you know, tough to pick up. And that's why it takes decades of training to be the best at it. So, yeah. I think he catches in summation, I think he catches a lot of wrongful flack for what happened at the Olympics. I think he's the scapegoat because he played okay and the rest of the team played okay. You still have seven guys and 12 or 14 guys on the roster. The whole team took what, fifth place, but it was an underwhelming fifth place, I think. So I think he's a scapegoat for a poor performance for the team. And as far as bringing him in now, I think with knowing that there's some injuries and you bring in a guy that has a very high ceiling, and a relatively low floor. I mean, you kind of don't have to set expectations too terribly high for him. I don't know. Yeah. I don't see any problem with it.
Hmm. Yeah. I think when it goes to that point is it's very low risk, very high reward. If he does come into the environment and he's able to pick it up quite easily. And like I said to someone on social media, we don't know what he's been doing in his off time. Like he could have been rugby training during the pandemic plus doing football stuff. So this could be something where I'm going to reiterate it again, as I'm no way advocating for him to go right onto the starting team because he was there 5 years ago. But it's my case is in regards to the squad. I think you guys can get the picture. It's just going to help the team prepare for the Olympics. I foresee him not getting selected for the side, but yeah. If he's able to come off the bench and he does get selected and he's able to add those quality minutes and he gets that team prepared to create that rugby environment, then I'm all for it. So I think this is going to be a debate that goes on for a long time because obviously USA Sevens is probably the more popular facet of rugby that people know in the country. So we'll see what they're going to say. But I think that's it, guys.
And on that note, just with Ebner, I think that is maybe the reason why, beyond his high ceiling, but one of the major factors is why Ebner gets in is because he is a little bit older. He's got that experience in a elite high performance atmosphere and culture. If he can push some of these newer guys that are getting opportunities because of injury, it just creates a more competitive environment. And maybe that is Mike Friday's angle.
Yeah. Cam, anything to add before we close off on this one?
No. Sorry to see my Bobcats fall on basketball. I thought we were going to dance. And that Creighton game was pretty hard to watch. But shout out to the Bobcats. And
Bobbies.
Yeah, the Bobbies. Best team in Ohio, so.
Yeah.
Man, every time I hear the Bobcats, I think of Charlotte. So, yeah, it shows how long I've been around the NBA, and they've changed names like 3 million times. Oh, so there we go.
Been about as often as they do, so. At least
continuity there. All right, guys. Well, thank you for joining us on the show today. I'm loving being back chatting footy with you guys. It's been a minute. Don't forget to check out the Rugby Index for all the breaking news and all the stories going on the MLR. These guys are doing some amazing things and got some very exciting things coming to you soon. So don't forget to subscribe to them. They are on all forms of social media. Also, don't forget to get 10% off your macro butter purchases with the code BONUSPOINT. The only nut butter that keeps my macros in my diet very happy. So definitely check them out. But boys, I'll let you have the final word before we close out. Cam, and I'll let you have the final word, Walker.
Final word.
Yeah. What do you got, Cam?
No, I'm excited. I hope the parity and the equal level of play holds strong throughout the year. And, you know, we just don't see any team fall deeply into the bottom or one team just run away with it. I really hope that the parity of the first week is here to stay.
Walker, what do you got? Figure on mute, buddy.
Poor form.
What are you on mute for? There you go. Sorry, fellas. You're off mute now.
Sorry, fellas. I'm really struggling today. The bar is set. It's week one. You take it at face value. How do you get better from here on every level? How does the broadcast improve? How do the teams improve? How does individual play? You got a data point. You've set a bar. How do you get better from here? And you can make all the excuses. You can have all the challenges in the world, which the teams do right now. But how do you overcome them? Galvanize your team, defeat adversity, and how do you get better? Because we had a very famous saying from one of our coaches: "You're either getting better or you're getting worse." So, how do you get better?
I'm loving these sayings today. They're so simple, but they're so effective because, like, it literally describes everything you need to say. Some people love going into long soliloquies. Cough me. And then you try and galvanize troops. But yeah, when you got a simple saying like that, that's all you need, guys. So yeah, thank you everyone for tuning into the Bonus Point Podcast. We will be back next week, same time, Tuesdays, 5:30 Pacific Standard Time. Boys, thank you for joining me. Tune in next week. We'll see you soon.
Thank you. Love you guys.